Good evening.
What do you make of George Osborne's visit so far, then? Is he asking for the right things?
Well, so far, I think he's mostly asking for things that that he can get, which is a sensible approach.
And what are those? What do you think of those that he is asking will make any difference then?
Well, the more that we can do to make Europe more competitive, to push the sort of jobs and growth agenda, the better it will be, not just for the UK, but for all the countries of Europe. And since Europe is our biggest market, that's pretty important for our economy too. So in those areas, I think he should be pushing at an open door. There will be some tricky negotiations over the question of the relationship between the countries that use the euro and the countries that don't.
Mm.
But he may be able to make some progress on that.
Yes, the non-Eurozone members, he feels, must be protected if the union sort of integrates further.
Yes, that's right. And his concern, I think he has two concerns, really. One is that non-Eurozone countries might be asked to help bail out Eurozone countries that get into financial difficulties. And he wants to avoid that, and made that clear in the case of Greece before.
Mm.
And then the second difficulty is that Eurozone countries might vote to do things which would damage the single market and therefore make it more difficult for countries outside the Eurozone but inside the EU to trade freely with the throughout the single market area.
Do you think there's much of an appetite in other EU countries for reform of the EU?
Well, it depends on what the reforms are.
Mm. Well, I'll tell you what I'm thinking of is clearly we've got problems like the refugee crisis. We've got what happened in Greece, the problems with the euro. Some people would look at that whole model and say, well, it's not really working.
Well, on the refugee crisis, it wouldn't matter whether you reformed Europe or not. You would still have the same problem, precisely the same problem. I mean, the problem is not that somehow or other the EU is not working. It's that when you've got tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people on the move, at a certain point, you run out of things that you can do.
Mm. And haven't we seen a bit of a split there, though, that we haven't acted as one Europe on this? In fact, there have been arguments over borders.
Yes, that is a problem. And frankly, it doesn't help that the UK has been among the most reluctant to take a share of the refugees. And while I have some sympathy for trying to keep people in place in the Middle East, the fact is that once they've left the Middle East and they're on the move, you've got to do something with them. You can't just leave them to freeze somewhere on a mountain in the Balkans.
Mm. But it has raised problems for Europe, as has the problem of the euro, the fact that all these different economies all have to use the same currency. I mean, do you think there is going to be a sort of two-tier Europe where we stay out of the euro and other countries operate differently within the eurozone?
Well, there's likely to be a number of countries that either stay out of the eurozone or don't join it for quite a prolonged period of time. And so the EU is going to have to cope with that one way or another. The question is what sort of arrangements are made to make sure that the interests of both those who are inside the euro and those who are outside the euro are protected.
And if we're completely honest, though, do you think there is enough room for manoeuvre, enough chance of renegotiation for David Cameron to come back to the general public and at a referendum with a significantly different offer on the table? Because I suspect the kind of things we're talking about are sort of tinkering at the edges, not really going to convince the public one way or the other.
Well, the problem is that there wasn't a fundamental problem to begin with. David Cameron has built this up as we must have treaty changes, we must have fundamental reform, but he's never been able to explain what the fundamental reform that he wants is.
Mm.
Now, he's due to write a letter to the president of the European Council later this week. We might get a little more idea of what he's driving at. But if you can't really explain what it is that's fundamentally wrong, it's a bit difficult to explain what needs to be fundamentally changed.
Yeah, well, I suppose that one of those fundamentals is ever closer union. That he seems to be dropping heavy hints that he doesn't want to be part of that.
Yeah, but that's I mean, not to get too technical about it, that's in what's called a preambular part of the treaty. So it's actually a part which doesn't have any force. I mean, it's an aspiration, it's a goal, and everybody interprets it in their own way. And indeed, last year, European leaders agreed to everyone interpreting that in their own way. So he's made that a sort of totemic thing which has to be dealt with. But actually, it didn't really matter in the first place.
Well, I mean, judging by the... I mean, I'm looking forward to some calls on this, and it'll be interesting to see what people say. But the kind of thing that I've heard before from callers to this station is there's a couple of things they're worried about. One is freedom of movement. Is there any chance of any kind of variation of that basic principle?
No, none at all, and nor should there be. There are almost as many Brits in the rest of Europe as there are other Europeans in the UK. I mean, it's pretty nearly balanced, and to the extent that there's an imbalance, it reflects the success of the British economy, which is drawing people in because this is where the jobs and growth is.
Right, so no chance of that. And the other thing people say to me is, it's not what we signed up for. What we wanted was a common market. We don't want this sort of union. We want a trading agreement. Is there any chance, again, of some kind of lower tier membership of the EU? Do you think David Cameron, George Osborne could come up with anything even approaching that?
Well, Mrs. Thatcher realised that you can't have a single market without having strong central institutions. The idea that you can have a common market without having a strong referee on the pitch in the form of the European Commission is just fantasy. And Mrs. Thatcher knew that, and that's why she was one of the strongest proponents of the kind of arrangements for majority voting on single market issues that we now have. Once you back away from that, you're basically licensing every country in Europe to impose protectionist measures against the UK or indeed other countries. And that would be catastrophic for our economy, and it would be catastrophic for the European economy on which so much of our economy depends.
And when it comes to the referendum, whenever we get it, probably not that far away, do you think people know enough to make an informed decision?
No, I don't. That's one of the big problems, is that people have prejudices about the EU, but they don't understand particularly well the realities of how it works. So people often talk about a democratic deficit in the EU, that decisions are taken by remote bureaucrats in Brussels. Well, decisions are taken by the European Council, or the Council of Ministers of the European Union, which is British ministers as well as everybody else. And we occasionally get outvoted in those meetings, but actually not very often. More than 80% of the time, we are in the majority on those issues. So it's not something that's being imposed, it's something that we've agreed to. And the decisions are taken by the European Parliament, which everybody has the chance to elect. If they don't choose to take that chance, or they vote for members of the European Parliament who don't turn up to meetings, well, that is their problem. But they have actually had the chance to vote for people who will take the job seriously and who will turn up and do an honest job of trying to defend Britain's interests in the European Parliament.